It's been another one of those running scared days, hasn't it? We've had difficulties right up to literally the very last second, but we have persevered. Welcome to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. My name is Sam, and with me today, as usual, is my good friend Mike.
Good to be here.
And my friend Eileen, we haven't seen for a while.
Hello, greetings.
Hello. So, if you were with us last week, we weren't actually here. It's the first time I think we'd ever done a completely pre-recorded episode, was it?
Pretty much.
I can't think of one, but we interviewed Alain de Botton, who wrote a book called Religion for Atheists, and it was an interesting book about what we could, how he phrases it, what we could steal from atheism, right?
That's how he puts it, yeah.
And as I said in that episode, we decided that we were going to withhold our commentary. For one thing, Alain was very nice. He gave us way more material than we could possibly use in an episode, and it was really good stuff, and it was really difficult just finding what we could remove. And we'll probably get to the rest of it someday, but we withheld our commentary, and a lot of folks on Ask an Atheist, or our Ask an Atheist listeners, weren't really happy that we withheld our commentary, but we had to, just to get everything in. So We decided we would talk about it today, and we also did something a little different. Mike and I, because we have kind of divergent opinions about this, decided that we would pre-record our initial responses without each other and without any foreknowledge of what the other was going to say.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I think it gave us the freedom to just speak at length without any sort of back and forth, no fear of stepping on the other person and getting everything you wanted to say out.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to play those now. Mike will speak for 4 minutes, and then I will speak for 4 minutes, and then when we come back, we will discuss it.
Last week on our show, we had an interview with author and philosopher Alain de Botton about his book, Religion for Atheists, and a lot of his ideas. Clearly, a lot of you guys thought that it was really, really, really important to respond to it, because we got more response to this episode than any other thing we've ever done on Ask an Atheist, and I feel the same way. I'd be lying if I said I didn't feel strongly about this, too. The impression that I came away with was that de Botton is a very nice man with some misguided, naive, and I think unintentionally harmful ideas about how the atheist visibility movement should organize ourselves. And I think at the heart of this is somebody who underestimates and doesn't get power, influence, and nastiness of religion in the United States, even in liberal places like Seattle. I think that he's sheltered by a lot of progressive, educated, rational people who look at someone like, say, Sarah Palin and think that this person must be part of an angry little fringe that's really loud, that they're obviously nuts, and that no reasonable mainstream person could ever take them seriously. Whether we like it or not, these people are mainstream, and they are a large, powerful part of the American dialogue on a lot of issues that affect a lot of people. And because he doesn't get that, I don't think that's why he doesn't get Richard Dawkins and the New Atheist Movement. Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and Christopher Hitchens became more vocal in the aftermath of 9/11, which is a violent act in the cause of religion. And to not understand that, and the religious noise that came from all directions about coming at our enemies in the name of Jesus that came in the aftermath of that, really misses the point that this isn't a boring conversation about whether God exists. This is a discussion about the harmful effects of faith and dogma on all of us, both in public and foreign policy, and that we need firebrands, and that we've grown under this tone, and that people like de Botton really misses the point when he says things like, oh, well, that's just a tiny little group. It's bigger than it was before, and that's what growth is. I think also that by telling us to hide the A word under the bed and stop arguing against the falsity of religion beliefs, we come against this stigma against us that it will never change, that we can battle for church-state separation and the harmful outcomes of religion while getting rid of that stigma at the same time. And by simply staying silent about it or hiding behind a wall of progressive religious people, whether he intends it or not, he is creating a formula in a world where we will have no influence in public policy, and that is just not acceptable. Changing the stigma is important to me, and while I love Americans United for a separation of church and state, that is not the end-all and be-all of where I want my activism to go. I'm tired of living in a world where I'm treated like a political leper, and doing nothing because changing that status quo is hard is not an answer I'm willing to accept. I am not willing to accept and accommodate other people's bigotry about non-believers, because it'll take a very long, hard time to change it. That's the best reason to do it. And it'll only take longer if we don't do anything. It's because it's so hard that I do this. It's because it's so hard that I get up early on Sunday mornings and work on this show, because I can't rely on other people to carry the load for me. You know, but I don't want to use this as an excuse to spit venom or throw rocks at Alain de Botton. This is not Ray Comfort with a magical force field around his brain. This is not an opportunistic turncoat like S.E. Cupp. This is about a man who is immune to argument. He's just misguided, and I think he'll sound different a year from now. I'm an optimist, and I think we need to engage him and change his mind, and I think we might be surprised at the sort of person he turns into, given enough time in this conversation.
And now, I'll give you my take on it. Going into this adventure, I hadn't liked what I had seen of Alain de Botton online, and the talk I went to at the University of Washington didn't really change my mind all that much. The talk seemed like a lecture for the self-satisfied, though that may have just been my opinion of Seattle literati. Even so, he did make a few comments about certain professors in Oxford, and one about those atheists, with requisite knowing smiles and laughs from the audience. I didn't participate, which was a really weird experience. So when we went to the hotel to have a conversation with de Botton, I was expecting more of the same, including veiled comments about others under a thin veneer of polite British professor. And that's not what we got, and it seems that he knows his audience. While he didn't really come out swinging, he didn't hold a lot back either. And I decided I liked this version, but for precisely the same reasons that he runs down in his lectures. He was honest, he wasn't afraid of saying unpopular things, and he had a clear idea about what he understood and what he did not. He allowed himself off-the-cuff opinions that were subject to change. That doesn't mean, however, that I agree with him. First and foremost, I think his opinions about Dawkins and Hitchens are just wrong. It's as if he's sitting down at the table mid-conversation and missing all the ridiculous crap that got us angry in the first place. It doesn't feel like he's advocating nonviolence, it feels like he's advocating non-response. The LGBT movement didn't get off the ground until they stopped not responding. I think his opinions about PZ, however, are a bit closer to the mark. When not being a science educator or debunker, PZ does stray into contrarianism, I think. When he suggested that we change the name to something other than atheism, I asked him if that would seem conspiratorial. He denied this, and I think he's in error here. Fundamentalist religions in recent times liken anything secular to this huge, vast atheist conspiracy. In this delusion, they get to put on the armor of a victim while still maintaining the majority, an oppressing majority, of the public space. Conspiracy theories are a branch of magical thinking common to religious authorities, and we don't need to look any further than the 1980 Satanic Panic, which is why I did that episode. Even if the current atheism visibility movement hadn't happened, merely calling ourselves something other than atheist would be soundly ignored by our opponents. Just ask the secular humanists. That phrase is now spat just as darkly as the word atheist in political circles. And that's sort of the point. What he's asking for has already been done, and most of it failed already. But what's worked, we've kept. For as positive as he speaks about history, he doesn't have a command of atheism history here in America, and he openly admits this. But talking about atheism in the United States without the context of Joe McCarthy and In God We Trust is to talk about an American atheism that doesn't exist. We may as well discuss bridge building without the lessons of Galloping Gertie, sleeping at the bottom of Puget Sound, not 5 miles from here. All of that said, I was impressed by his honesty when he said that until this book tour, he didn't really understand atheism in the U.S. It made me think that he could have titled this book Religion for Western European Atheists, but I won't pretend to understand Europe. Ultimately, and most importantly to me, de Botton and I want the same thing. A fully secular society is the inheritor of all of human history and experience. Art, literature, architecture, cooking, philosophy, government, you name it. And as he repeatedly points out, during much of the past 12,000 years, all of this was under the auspices or wholly appropriated by religion. We as atheists should not turn our back on the things that defined human culture. But saying that we're stealing it from religion, as he says in the book, and saying we're reclaiming it, as he says in the interview, are not the same thing to me. After talking to Alain de Botton, I still dislike his opinion on how the atheism movement can succeed. A lend-lease program of our momentum to the religious authorities will not work. But I walked away with a real respect for the man. It was clear to me that his heart was in the right place, he wasn't afraid of hard thought, and he didn't live in a bubble. He made a supporter out of me. And I fully believe he will endeavor to fill all of the gaps in his knowledge, and I look forward to when he does. But I am expecting a mea culpa. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. So that was, yeah, that was our pre-recorded statements about the Alain de Botton interview. And so let's talk about it right now. I'm actually a little surprised at how much overlap in our opinions there were.
I don't know if I was completely surprised. I was actually a bit more surprised after the interview happened, because we'd had this conversation before, Sam, that
yeah.
Going into this interview, you kept your cards really close to the vest.
I haven't done that in a while. Yeah, I did.
And that actually made me really nervous, because I went into this having listened to the recording you made of his talk and the articles that I saw he wrote, and I looked at his website, and I was really not happy with what I saw.
No.
I was not happy at all, and since I wasn't getting anything from you, I was terrified that I was the only person who felt this way. And I really was going into this with the fear that I was going to just haul off on this guy.
There's a really good reason why I didn't give you my opinion immediately, is because I had seen a couple of his talks, including his Atheism 2.0 talk at TED, and to be honest, I hadn't seen a lot of it. Or I hadn't seen the whole thing. And then I actually Mike didn't have the opportunity to, but Becky and I went to see him speak at Meany Hall up at UW. And what, like I said, in my opinion, it was a conversation to the self-satisfied. It seemed kind of cheap. And I was afraid that if I gave voice to my opposition, I'd sit down at the table, flip on the microphone, and say, "Mr. de Botton, why do you suck so bad?" And I didn't want to do that. So if I didn't give my opinions voice, I could easily, it was a way easier for me to ignore them. So you would go on about it, and it's like, "Mike, I don't want to talk about this, because if I actually..." You know, and I'm in the back of my head is I can't even say, if I say what I feel, it's going to bleed over into the interview. I had to clamp down on my opinions, because I really wanted to give this guy the benefit of the doubt. And in hindsight, I'm really glad I did, because like I said in my comment, I actually really like him. He's a nice guy. He's a good conversationalist, and I think he's got some good ideas, especially when it comes to stuff that he really cares about, like architecture. But his ideas on how to sort of prosecute the atheism visibility movement, I think are alien, weird, and wrong.
I feel like he claimed himself in the interview that he was raised an atheist, and he actually quoted a quote as "fiercely atheistic household." Mm-hmm. He grew up in an environment where he felt safe to be an atheist. He also, his perception is that he lives in a country, which is the UK, where most citizens don't believe. That's his perception of it.
Right.
As well as that the clergy in the Church of England don't even believe. Vastly different in the United States. So his perception of what we're battling here in the US, and the fact that some of us aren't even comfortable enough with coming out and saying, "I'm an atheist," let alone you, and even just fearing the word itself, I felt that he was a little bit naive in what we're actually doing here.
I think naive was said in both comments, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's definitely a word that comes across, because during the interview there were several instances where we mentioned something to him and he just seems to have no idea what we're talking about, and
yeah.
And not just the word cooties. I mean, it's things like actual nastiness. And he mentions this even several times himself, to his credit, that
yeah.
When he would go to a place like, say, Kansas, and people would take him inside and said, "Do you really understand what the experience mm-hmm. of an atheist in the United States is?"
Mm-hmm.
And he will freely admit that he doesn't.
And I really appreciate it. I use the word naive. We could also use the word ignorant. But I'm really loath to use those words, because they're not... you know, they have really negative social undertones. But the thing is, the difference between, say, ignorance and naivete versus stupidity is these are easily correctable things with
yes.
knowledge. And this is knowledge that he openly admits he doesn't have and appears to be seeking, from my perspective, which is part of the reason why I walked away with a really positive view of the guy, if not his arguments.
In some ways, I came with a more positive view of him in some ways, and other ways, I came away with a very negative view of his ideas. Negative even more so than I had assumed they were going to be, to certain things, like tossing him a question about, is there a place for a more, I guess you could say, spirited conversation about religion, and he said absolutely not.
Yeah.
These are kind of my litmus test questions that I toss people, and he did not do well on these questions at all.
No.
To be fair, though, there were two points that I do think he hit really strongly, and I'd be lying before we get into some of the more... biting controversial stuff that I have to touch on this stuff. One is that I think he made a very good and articulate case for secular morality early in the conversation.
I agree.
And second, I think that he made one point about not being afraid of grabbing power. And in some of our non-radio conversations about politics, Sam, this is something that I've said a lot, that power isn't inherently bad.
No.
The same way that technology or knowledge or even money are inherently bad, but the use to which you put them can be good or bad.
At the other end of this continent, as we sit here talking, there's sort of an exposition of the power of the atheism visibility movement going on right now with the Reason Rally. And this is what we need. This is how we make our case to the public. You cannot do this with some sort of social power.
It's not like the end of The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, where simply your positive vibes are somehow going to change everyone's minds. You have to show power. You have to show that you represent a large number of people that can't be ignored and can't be excluded.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with saying, I want to take that power and use it for something good.
And I have to admit, the conversation I had with Alon that really made me like, you know, that really kind of changed my opinion of him, we had to remove from the interview, and it was when we started talking about Carl Sagan. And I promised that we'll play that someday. And he turns out he's a big fan of Carl Sagan, where, you know, he was talking about, he makes the case that we need information, and we also need sort of the numinous, as Carl Sagan calls it. And he seemed to talk about how they were separate things. And I said, what about Carl Sagan? He does a really good job of including both those things. And he was right there with me.
But there's a bit of a failure there where he talks about he wants 5 minutes of fact and 20 minutes of beauty and poetry. And I think Carl Sagan is the antidote to that misconception.
I think so.
Is that he can make the facts into poetry rather than assuming that these things are mutually exclusive, and they're not.
Yeah, I think he seems to think that an executive summary of science will do the job, and I'm not certain I agree, especially given the political culture here in America. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to go into the break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking about our opinions of the interview, including some of yours.
If you long to escape the religious bias on your television, if you love scientific shows, if you think that funny and thought-provoking are not mutually exclusive, then we'd like to welcome you to a network made with you in mind. Secular Video Network is an online source for free thinking programs. We feature a range of videos from Mr. Deedy, The Thinking Atheist, and Richard Dawkins. While watching, you can participate in our live chat for engaging discussions. There is no cost, there is no proselytizing, just non-stop thought-provoking shows. So visit us at secularvideonetwork.com.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
Sigmund Freud said, "The voice of the intellect is a soft one, but it does not rest until it has gained a hearing." Whether you're at a point in life where you are questioning your beliefs, or if you've always been an atheist or agnostic, the Auburn Freethought Society is a place where your own voice of intellect will be heard. You'll interact with like-minded people, engage in intellectual conversation, and share your experiences with others in the Auburn, Washington area. At Auburn Freethought Society, we encourage critical thought and reason. For details, find us on Facebook and on Meetup.com. Auburn Freethought Society. Have real discussion and share real ideas freely.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Come to this year's Northwest Freethought Alliance Conference, March 30th through April 1st at Renton Technical College in Renton, Washington. Speaking at the conference is Richard Dawkins, Professor Emeritus of Biology at Oxford, author of many books including The Magic of Reality, and well-known to the atheist community as one of the Four Horsemen. Also speaking is friend of the show and author of Attack of the Theocrats, Sean Faircloth. The cast of Ask an Atheist will be making an appearance and recording an episode in front of a live audience. For more information, visit nwfreethoughtalliance.org.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And Eileen's got some questions for us about the interview. So why don't we get into a couple of those?
So going back to my what you said right before the break about Carl Sagan had a talent of putting fact into poetry. Mr. de Botton actually said, we need to watch our good orators, and when we're convinced and enthused, we need to take a step back and ask if the message is valid. What do you guys think of those in terms of whether or not our firebrands, like the people that he mentioned, Dawkins, P.Z. Myers, Christopher Hitchens, as good orators and people, I believe that they're good orators, and I believe that they're articulate and can convey our message as well, versus people like Carl Sagan, who do it a little bit differently. What's your take on that?
I think we need them all.
I do, too. I think that you need a diverse approach, that you should never have a monochromatic movement of any kind.
Yeah.
And that when you only have one kind of speaker, one kind of tone, you're only going to reach one kind of person.
Yeah.
And I think, mentioning this, looking at our orators, I think that it's important to have a very artistic sort of approach, a very emotionally grabbing approach, but that has to be grounded in a foundation of facts. And I think that's my criticism of religion, is it doesn't always do that.
I agree.
It basically the same thing is, I mean, I do look at the fact content of our speakers. And Christopher Hitchens, there's very little he said that I actually disagree with, kind of ridiculously so, just as an example. So I think he's got a point, but I think what he's talking about is occurring.
My take on it is that I agree with you both. I believe that we need both people, because I myself am more of a diplomat. I'm not very articulate in terms of arguing with someone. I get emotionally involved when I argue and lose my train of thought, and I'm not exactly able to convey my message as articulately as I would like. So my approach to being more public about my atheism is about talking about it and making people feel comfortable with the people that atheists are, and not necessarily the stigma that associates atheism with it. So it just is so negative all the time.
Right.
He also wrote in his book that atheists should build temples, and he got a lot of backlash because he actually used the word temple. But his thought behind it was to build facilities where you could essentially find a community base. Had more of a center for places to go. What do you guys think about that?
This is actually, I know this is a point of contention between me and Sam. I tend to think this is a really bad idea. I think that we don't need to build these things, or we don't need to build them with exclusively these sort of contemplative purposes. I think that there's no reason that it can't have both a practical use and a use that sense. You could build a hospital that could be very calming or very beautiful. There's no reason. Many colleges have
it. With all due respect, I find that kind of cheap, because if you're looking for a place that builds that specifically for whenever you build something with a purpose, that purpose is going to always sort of have higher weight than any contemplative purposes that you're going to have for it. I would not use the word temple, because temple is way too loaded a term.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of architecture as art, and particularly architecture for the purpose of something other than just housing people or putting sick people in it or putting food in it. I think there needs to be a time and a place for architecture purely as art. I think there does need to be some space for that. Now, unfortunately, we got to move on. We have some opinions of our listeners, and we're basically just going to take a few minutes to read them. And most of these come from our website, so you can actually see them there. The first one is from Akemon on the website, and he says, I agree with what he says, especially about architecture and having contemplative places that aren't religious. Sam Harris also champions this idea, which is great. However, I think Debatton is completely off base when he says that we shouldn't be trying to persuade people to drop religion or that it's futile. Plenty of counterexamples. I also agree there's no place for ridicule or insult. Sometimes offending people is what it takes to shake people up and make them re-examine their positions. He might have a point about P.Z. Myers, though. I admire a lot of what Myers says, but sometimes he gets a little vitriolic when it's really unnecessary. Overall, I think atheism and skepticism is a big enough tent for a variety of views and tactics.
This goes back to needing firebrands and diplomats. We need both people in order to get the message across, because you attract different people by speaking to different people that are comfortable with their message.
So what's our next one?
Our next one is Noisician on the website. I was glad to hear this interview because I think de Botton has some good ideas that I
think are not commonly discussed with respect to atheism. Alain de Botton makes two assertions I think he has not supported. One, that P.Z. Myers generally uses inflammatory language instead of rational, reasoned arguments. It would have been nice to hear examples of irrational arguments which P.Z. has made instead of just this assertion, because that is not the impression I have of Ferengula. Two, that there is not an important place for voices like P.Z., Dawkins, Hitchens in this movement. Really? He didn't notice the huge explosion and discussion of visibility of atheism caused by the Four Horsemen?
And we got this one from Rich in London, UK. He said, when I saw that this was a topic, I felt a little trepidatious about all that he has said and about de Botton following the book and his recent speeches. That said, I listened and was quite surprised at what he had to say and started agreeing with him much of what he had to say after he clarified some of his points. And then there was the ad break. I began to listen to the second segment and was horrified. A blistering attack on PZ, which was, as far as I was concerned, the very thing he was accusing PZ of. And to say that PZ didn't use science, evidence, or reason, I balked. Yes, he might sometimes be forceful and swear a bit and come across as angry. But as Greta Christina said, sometimes we are angry, and that anger needs to be voiced. Then there's the old trope of atheist fundamentalism, and that to say, to challenge people's beliefs is pointless. I couldn't disagree more. Such a shame, as he started off so well.
Well, that's really all the time we have for opinions right now. We got a big show today, and to start talking about our next topic, we have an interview with Becky. And Becky, take it away.
Dick Alford was the first president of Humanists of Washington. Born in Centralia, he has geology degrees from the University of Washington and Yale University. Dick returned to Western Washington and spent a career in public service working in criminal rehabilitation as a parole officer. We visited Dick in his home yesterday to talk about the early history of humanism in the Seattle area, as well as the past, present, and future of the movement.
As far as humanism, I called myself that, even though I was raised as a nominal Christian, and was very active and so on in the church and choirs and singing and teaching Sunday school and all those sort of things. But anyway, I called myself a humanist because I realized superstition, you know, imaginary myths really didn't make any sense to me. Here I am talking about things that are 4.6 billion years old, looking at fossils that go back tens, hundreds, a few billions of years. Why it didn't make any sense to talk about 6 days, you know, the ignorant myth that when you're trying to explain things, you don't have the knowledge to be able to explain them, you just make up things, and that's what the human race has always done. So anyway, I call myself a humanist, saw a little ad in a weekly or monthly newsletter that came out about science news. And then it said, are you a humanist? I said, hey, that's me. I am. And I looked at American Humanist Association in Yellow Springs, Ohio. So in 1966, I wrote back there and have been taking a humanist magazine ever since. And so I got a list of humanists and contacted them. And nothing really came of that except I found the humanist group here in Seattle in 1967. So then I met them. Then I met my wife in 1968. We met on June 25th. We were married on July 13th. Member of the American Humanist Association, and my wife was very much a free thinker. As far as trying to get a humanist group going here, there was kind of a false start in the mid-70s, but then in 79, why then? Another AHA member, Fred Berg, sent out postcards. He did the same thing I had done. Contacted AHA when he was a new member, got a whole bunch of lists of people, sent out postcards, would you like to get together? We did, and that was the in the summer, July or so of 1978, and then by, or 79 rather, and then we met several times, including sitting right here in this house and talking about forming a humanist group. And by, I was a pro tem president to get things organized, and we had a pro tem secretary, treasurer, and so on, vice president. And then by February, we had a meeting and decided let's form a group. And what do we call ourselves? Humanists of Seattle. And so we voted to do that, and that's really when we took off.
Who made up Humanists of Seattle?
Well, again, a group of people, most of whom were American Humanist Association members. As far as publicity we got in the newspapers, and I think newspaper clippings and things like that are in our archives there, that got an awful lot of other people in the area. A lot of those people sent in letters in response to the newspaper article we got. And when we got that group going, we not only had weekly discussion groups, We had a Care and Concern Fellowship because we had several people that were humanist counselors. They could legally perform marriages and so on. So what we did was have those counselors, and they had a Care and Concern Fellowship when, instead of just talking about highfalutin things and just having fun, you talk about personal problems, moral issues, and so on.
So balance of the social, the intellectual, and sort of the
and there was activism.
Emotional.
There was activism. One of the things we did was in 81, went down to see the American Humanist Association convention in San Diego. And the Cosmos man managed to get the Humanist of the Year award.
Carl Sagan.
Carl Sagan. And so he gave his little spiel of the history of the universe there as his talk. We had all the, now the creationism headquarters for the world was in San Diego at the time. And we had all these kids all sitting around, standing around the outside of the room who had paid a little money to get in to hear this talk and so on. And they were from the Creationist Society.
Oh,
one was majoring in geophysics, and here I had been a geologist, so it's kind of fun. They stayed away from anything that had the world being billions of years, let alone hundreds of millions of years old and so on. And they would deal with geophysics, where you just see the structure of the Earth by bouncing sound waves or percussion waves through the rocks and see what the structures of the Earth are. But they didn't have to deal with stratigraphy and fossils and the age of the rocks and then structures they were dealing with.
Slightly intellectually dishonest.
It was really, really weird. Yeah, really weird. But anyway, so here were all these kids listening to Sagan's talk, and they didn't make a peep, you know. But anyway, that was great. The reason we went down there to San Diego to go to that conference is because then they went back and forth from East Coast to West Coast each year. So we put in for the 83 convention to be here in Seattle. And we pulled it off. So there's big folders in there of all kinds of stuff from our sponsoring the 1983 American Humanist Association National Convention.
Now, when Sam and I chatted with you earlier this year, you know, we realized that you had this incredibly rich knowledge about free thought in the Seattle area across, you know, several decades, even before you yourself identified as a humanist. To your knowledge, what's sort of the profile of free thought in the 40s and 50s and 60s in Seattle?
The group, the first group that I know of in Seattle, of the Humanist Society in Seattle, was University of Washington professors and so on. And I don't know any other than Dr. Costigan, Giovanni Costigan. Anyway, he was one of the people in that group. And they had an actual reading room in a building downtown Seattle, kind of like the Christian Science reading rooms, where you could come and have some coffee and visit with like-minded people, and there'd be books and pamphlets and magazines and things around you could read. So it was a meeting place for people to come. Now, how it was staffed and how it worked, I don't know. I just knew from Dr. Costigan, and that was the first quote-unquote humanist group in the area. Well, the freeway was put through in the 60s, and right where the freeway went through was where that building had been. Mm-hmm. So now when I'm driving down through I-5, heading through downtown Seattle, as I get near where the convention center is over the freeway, I realize somewhere right in here was this first humanist group. You know, they're meeting in this reading room up in a building. Then when I was a member of the AHA in 66 and contacted some people, the main people I met here in Seattle were members of a new group, the Humanist Community of Seattle. And the Humanist Community turned out were a group of people. There was a Canon University professor and so on, Douthwaite. Those people got together and decided they were going to buy a bunch of houses on Capitol Hill and live together and form a community. So there's a totally different...
A 60s communal living
type. Yeah, very different thing, except they were going to buy regular houses and pay mortgages and so on. She didn't live in the house, so they put a sign over the door, Humanist House.
Did you ever go to Humanist House?
Yeah, and that's what happened. Then when I found these people existed, well, then I came in from Renton on Friday nights. I'm pretty sure is when their main meeting was. And they'd have program meetings and speakers and some from within the group and some they'd get from the university or for outside. I had an anthropologist who'd spent years with Aborigines in Australia and told us about some of these unique experiences he had sleeping with everybody, dreaming each other's dreams. It was really an interesting evening. So... there were those Friday night meetings that I did come in for. They even had a Sunday school and Sunday mornings sort of thing. Family, they would get together for fun times and go to movies together and things like that. But coming in from Renton and working hard as a ditch digger at the time before I got my job at the state, why I didn't have much time to do anything other than come in for those Friday night meetings, and the rest of the time I was busy with my things, with my family, Island Centrae, and so on.
So between that time when Humanist House or Humanist Houses sort of existed in the Capitol Hill area of Seattle and about a decade later, do you think that there was any, were you aware of any sort of Humanist organized activity or free thought community in Seattle?
What happened was, of course, members were so part of the, people were still members of the American Humanist Association and would participate in those activities, their yearly conferences they had and so on. But Betty Chambers, who has lived in Lacey, she's retired long for years now, but she's been a firecracker getting a lot of humanist activities going in different places. Well, she became the American Humanist Association president, I think for something like about 8 years back there in the 70s. After I had seen her talk once at one of the meetings here in Seattle, a Friday night meeting, Ms. Betty Chambers came from Spokane, and she talked about, she had been a biology teacher, and she was very concerned about all this human, this creationist stuff coming, and we needed to do something about fighting that, taking over school boards and so on across the country.
Well, that's in the 60s and 70s, right? This is still very pertinent now.
Oh, yeah, sure, right now, yeah, sure. But anyway, so Betty Chambers was there, and so then she became an AHA president, and then here she was out here living in Lacey, Washington. So we had plenty of people who individually were active in doing things. The humanist community group, when I got married, I had other things on my hands and mind rather than going to these humanist meetings. But I got their newsletter and I contacted people a couple times. But I was really pretty much busy with my new family.
Many free thought groups have sprung up into existence in the last decade, especially in Seattle, in this area, and really across the U.S. But we're sort of all under the umbrella of free thought. Do you see these sort of disparate groups as a continuation of the activities of the 70s and 80s and 90s that you were really involved in? Do you think that this is something brand new or a continuation of sort of our legacy?
Well, I think it's a continuation. It's developing more and more.
This is Ask an Atheist. We are going to go into a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about an announcement that has to do with Humanists of Washington.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide $1 bajillion in your locker.
Wow, $1 bajillion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
A few weeks ago, listener Peggy from Kent, Washington, challenged Ask an Atheist listeners to financially support the program and help keep us on the air. Your response has humbled us, and we want to continue to milk this challenge and beg for money.
So far, we've gotten contributions from more than 20 listeners from all over the United States and abroad. Thank you. We know this isn't the easiest time to spend cash on any cause, and recognizing this, your generosity is all the more appreciated. This week, we want to thank
Craig from Petaluma, California.
Troy from Ambler, Pennsylvania.
Jeffrey from Howell, Michigan.
Haruyoshi from Sunnyvale, California.
Saber from Floral City, Florida.
William from Chicago, Illinois.
And Michelle from Vancouver, British Columbia, up in Canada. As we've said before, on the air and in our occasional fundraising pleas, staying on the radio is important to us. If we want to effectively become part of the national discussion, battle misconceptions about non-believers, and expose a general audience to opinions often excluded from most media, we need to be in a broadcast medium.
Sam and I are the sales department here at Ask an Atheist, and selling advertising advertising spots on an atheist radio show to local businesses isn't exactly the cushy job you probably imagine it is. But we try to channel our experiences constructively and remind ourselves that this is why we have a show in the first place.
Unfortunately, the reality is that despite the encouraging support of our advertisers and listeners, we're not yet at the point that this show can pay for its own $200 an episode price tag. Please consider clicking the donate button at askanatheist.tv and helping us reach that day.
Also, if you run a business and would like to buy advertising on Ask an Atheist, I can assure you that we have the lowest prices on the radio. A 30-second spot costs only $15. If you buy six or more spots, we'll even produce it for you for free.
And if you own a comic book shop in the United States and buy regular ads with us, I will move my weekly pull list to your shop and buy comics exclusively with you for as long as you buy ads with us.
And that's it for the begging this week. Now on with ads.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Did you know that not a single psychic or paranormal event has ever been reproduced?
Have you ever wondered about the effectiveness of faith healing, Reiki, or sports bracelets?
Was 9/11 an inside job, or is that all just another unproven conspiracy theory?
Come check out the Seattle Skeptics, a group focused on lively debates and a critical examination of pseudoscience, alternative medicine, and anything else that hasn't held up to the light of the scientific method.
Seattle Skeptics was created for those who require a higher bar of evidence than gut feelings or blind belief.
We're not contrarians or cynics, we just want to see the evidence.
And so should you.
Check us out at seattleskeptics.org.
That's seattleskeptics.org.
Come to this year's Northwest Freethought Alliance Conference, March 30th through April 1st at Renton Technical College in Renton, Washington. Speakers include Richard Dawkins, Oxford Professor Emeritus of Biology, and friend of the show Sean Faircloth, author of Attack of the Theocrats. In addition to this keynote address at the conference, Mr. Dawkins will be repeating his comments for the general public Sunday afternoon. Register for the full conference at nwfreethought.org or reserve your $5 ticket for the Sunday afternoon program at the same website by clicking on the second session added link. Go to nwfreethought.org and register today.
Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Ah, man, it's cruising along today. And we're going to, before we get into talking about the interview with Dick Elvard, we have Rich and Deanna of Ask an Atheist and Living After Faith podcast on the line. They're at the Reason Rally in Washington, D.C. and want to tell us about it. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, we're doing great. We've spent the weekend schmoozing with all of the most amazing atheists and activists and just regular people at the convention.
That sounds great. So how's it look out there? I heard there were thunderstorms. How's the turnout been?
The weather was awful, but the turnout, it depends on, you know, if you pick up your newspaper, it's going to say 8,000 to 10,000 people, but the Parks Department, who is over that stuff, said that there were between 20,000 and 25,000 people that actually showed up for the Reason Rally. Now, once the thunderstorm started, people pretty much scattered, and the crowd looked kind of, you know, bleak, but it, in reality, it was a pretty good crowd. The National Mall area was pretty full of people.
So 20, 25,000, that sounds like that's about, if not topping, the sort of numbers that Glenn Beck got last year.
I think it is, yeah. Somebody mentioned beating out Glenn Beck, so I'm proud of that. If nothing else, the rally accomplished that.
So we can beat them with both numbers and content?
Absolutely.
Certainly the content. The content was awesome. The keynote, of course, Richard Dawkins was excellent. We at the American Atheist Convention today, he also spoke this morning, and we've already got that up as a podcast on Living After Faith, but it's taking a different turn. Dawkins' conversation was very political. You know, he's a scientist, usually talks science, but his conversation both yesterday and today was shooting straight down the line political, and even went so far as to mention, would you really want to vote for a candidate who believes that magical golden tablets were dug up from the earth, and with the aid of a magical rock and a top hat, a guy was able to read these and translate in 19th century America into 16th century Old English text, a sacred document that we're supposed to believe and live. You know, would you really want to vote for someone who believes that story?
Wow. That's a little bit surprising.
Yeah.
I guess my next question is, do you think the message was received? Or do you think the people who this rally is pointed at, do you think it got it?
I really do. At first, when he started talking politics, it got really quiet. But he made some really strong points, and he approached them from a logical standpoint. You know, these people, and what he was saying is, these people are believers in something that is absurd, something that is not provable, something that is strange. And if that's the kind of reasoning they're using, are they really qualified to be the leader of the most powerful country in the world? And that's where he left it.
So, Rich, you've been both at the rally, and you've also seen some of the news reports, some of the things that the papers are writing about it. Do you think that the news coverage of it has been fair?
You know, I really haven't seen that much of the coverage from it, because we've been kind of inside and locked in a lot. The main thing, I've got kind of a headline view of what they said. I did see one article where they quoted, obviously, someone that was not really... you know, if you walk in a crowd of 25,000 people, you can pick someone that's not exactly the sharpest person in that crowd, and I saw one of those interviews that had that guy. But overall, it's an extreme success.
So that's fantastic. Any parting words for us? Anything funny happen? Or
oh wow, anything funny happened? There've been a lot of funny things said and done, but none of those that we could report on commercial.
Well, thank you for your update. This is a momentous occasion for the atheism movement, and I'm glad that we're able to report on it. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, talk to you soon. That was Rich Lyons and Deanna Joy Lyons of the Living After Faith podcast, and they're at the Reason Rally in Washington, D.C., filling us in. So to get back to our interview with Dick Alvord and the first president of Humanists of Washington, I'm going to take off my Ask an Atheist sort of producer hat and put on my member of the board of directors of Humanists of Washington hat for the rest of the show, well, at least until the credits. So... Eileen here is the vice president of Humanists of Washington, and she's got a pretty major announcement for the Washington area.
Yes. So over the last couple of months, we've been new and, say, invigorated and enthusiastic new board of directors of Humanists of Washington. We recognize the legacy that we now have to live up to and continue, both what Dick Alvord spoke to and also the legacy that Barbara Doherty and Jim Rybak, our predecessors on the board, who have recently retired, have left with us to continue.
Yeah.
So, that said, we see that the Humanists of Washington, because of the history that we have that's so entrenched in the atheism movement in the state of Washington, we have something that's unique that we can build off of and offer to the rest of the atheist community in the state of Washington. I'm not just talking locally. I'm not just talking about the Puget Sound. I'm not just talking about Seattle. I'm talking about the entire state of Washington.
And part of that is the history, right?
Yes, absolutely. So we've recently come up with... a means to organize. And
right.
This is an organization that we invite organizations to join, not necessarily individual members.
Now, if I can talk about this a little
Absolutely.
Bit. The thing about the Puget Sound area and Washington State, and this came from Seattle Atheist ad campaign, the 1-in-4 Washington campaign, which we talked about on the show earlier, is that we are... according to the Pew Research poll, one person in four, 25% of the population of Washington State does not believe in God. Maybe they don't call themselves an atheist. And we're not talking about spiritual but not religious. We're talking about people who don't believe in a religion. However, this group of people are still a safe political target We're still, you know, we're still thrown under the bus at the first opportunity, and we have no voice at the, on the state level. Now, there's a lot of movement in the atheism and free thought communities here in Washington, but they're all on the local level. They're all, Seattle Atheist, Tacoma Atheist, Auburn Free Thought, Northwest Central Free Thought Organization. There's a bunch of these organizations, and there's no... And I feel like if these organizations could join together, that we could have that voice on the state and the regional stage.
Yes, and with that, we have created and will present officially at next weekend's Northwest Freethought Conference, the Evergreen State Freethought Federation. What it will be is an alliance or partnership of all the freethought organizations in the state of Washington. Our goal is to create a strong statewide community of the participating organizations.
Yes.
Again, it's not a group of where individuals can join, and we have we recognize the identity that each of these groups maintain. Seattle Atheists has a specific identity, as well as Tacoma Atheists, as well as Auburn Freethought.
And they have differing purposes.
Exactly.
The point here is not to be necessarily the people in charge of statewide atheism. What we're looking for is sort of a clearinghouse and meeting space where these organizations can get together, work together, come up with plans. We can do activism on the statewide level. We can do social organization on the statewide level. And part of the way that we do this is by offering concrete benefits for being a member of this organization.
So rather than being a group that's usurping all of this, we're talking about a group that helps them collaborate and communicate, more like the military joint chiefs,
yeah,
rather than creating a separate branch of the military.
Exactly.
And what's important here is that it's not, you cannot join this organization as a person. You can only join in this organization if you are an organization, and membership of this federation is derived through your membership of these local organizations.
Yes, and all of these organizations independently have strength that we intend to harness and hope to strengthen even community-wide and statewide through this organization. And when Sam spoke to about giving concrete benefits to members of this larger organization of the Federation, as we've been lovingly calling it.
I figured if we called it the Federation, Jerry, a Star Trek fan would go along with it.
We want to facilitate the strengthening and building of the community working in concert. And doing so, we want to share information, provide resources and tools, and provide support. We intend to do that by doing specific things. One, our main goal is...
And you've heard the commercials about this for
yes,
a while, and I can finally say that it's happening.
Yes. We intend to put together the Humanist Community Center.
Yeah.
As the Board of Washington, we've actually been recently looking at properties in the region that might suit our needs. Honestly, it's been a very uplifting and encouraging experience. Now that we're concretely looking for facility space, it's really been encouraging.
It's been a lot of fun, and I have to admit, as a Tacoman, all right, the first Humanist Center is going to be in Seattle. It's where all the people are. I recognize that. We got to do it that way. But we really foresee a Humanist Center in all, through a chain of Humanist Centers, not necessarily a chain, but I guess a group of Humanist Centers throughout the entirety of Washington. I'd like to see one in Tacoma. I'd like to see one in Walla Walla. I'd like to see one in Spokane. They need to be all over the place. There's humanists everywhere. They need these tools. We need to provide them for them. But we're going to use Seattle as sort of the launching pad for this.
Yes, and we intend to expand, and we intend to facilitate satellite offices all across the region, all across the state. That includes you, Eastern Washington.
This is where I apologize profusely. I have been kind of in charge of getting organizations to sign up, and in getting Eastern Washington organizations, which we believe is critical to the purpose of getting this federation off the ground. I have been unsuccessful or remiss or just bad at it. You pick one. And I've tried emailing some people in Eastern Washington with Eastern Washington groups. It's been very difficult for me to find good contacts. If you are in Eastern Washington and you're a member of one of these groups or hopefully in charge of one of these groups and you feel like a statewide federation is important, contact us at humanistofwashington.org, or you can contact us at askanatheist.tv. Look for me, tell me that you want to get in touch with me. I will jump at the chance to talk to you, and hopefully we can get this sort of thing off the ground. I'm really sorry about that.
No, and it's we had every intention of including everyone. We have to launch somewhere, and our base is here in the western part of Washington. We want you. We want to include you. So
it's critical. We can't be a state. We cannot be a statewide actor if we're not statewide. Exactly. It just won't work.
Exactly. And the benefits that we are going to continue to talk about will be afforded to you as well. So we wanted to branch out through the entire state and make sure that you are also privileged to these benefits. One of the other things that we hope to do, I shouldn't say hope, because these are concrete plans now.
Yeah.
Is a Celebrant and Speakers Bureau, where we actually have local speakers that we could plan conferences with and, you know, common events with. And also we have a network of people within the community that are able and legally able to do different types of ceremonies, like wedding ceremonies, funerals, things of that nature.
And also a Speakers Bureau. This concrete tool is going to be doing double duty. And some of the celebrants involved, you know, just not to put too fine a point on it, but you've heard them in this episode. So there are people who know how to do this, know how to give it a atheist and humanist spin, and will make it not religious and not call you out for your sin or whatnot. And this if you want that kind of ceremony, this is where you can go. And we're going to have people statewide. And it also, if you want people to come out and talk to you about certain subjects, we'll have a clearinghouse for that, for people in Washington can quickly get access to these things.
Yes. The next thing that we plan on giving as a benefit is the Legal Defense Fund. And Sam, maybe you can speak to this a little bit better.
The Legal Defense Fund is, we've noticed that in Washington, you know, every time we do something in the media, every time we do something with advertising, Ask an Atheist has been in this position, there's always something, there's always a scary, looming, perhaps something might go wrong, perhaps maybe, you know, not Jerry Falwell, he's dead. Well, is he?
Definitely pretty dead.
Okay, all right. You know, somebody will sue us. And so to sort of build a protection against that, we're going to build a statewide, for the Evergreen State Freethought Federation, we're going to build a Legal Defense Fund. And that Legal Defense Fund will work in concert with national legal defense funds in order to support Washington humanists and atheists when things go wrong.
Yes.
Legally, anyway.
Yes.
It's not like we're going to hire mercenaries or something, right?
Oh,
I mean, as much as cool as the A-Team is, I just something tells me that might not be great. So, what else will the Evergreen State Freethought Federation provide?
The last thing that, speaking to what Dick Valford said, and the legacy that Humanists of Washington has so much to build on, is that we intend to move forward with a secular humanist press online.
Yeah.
One of the things that the Humanists of Washington has been so proud of for so many years, and has been something that we've wanted to contribute to the community for so long, and have done a really good job of it, thanks to Barbara Doherty and Jim Rybak, is the Secular Humanist Press.
Right.
The last print issue came out this past winter, but we intend to continue to share information, do articles, reviews, letters, essays, not just from local writers, but actually from national contributors as well. People like, you know, hopefully that we can grab Greta Christina, other people like individuals like her. And who can contribute to the information that we want to spread along and share with the rest of the state.
And the idea is that if you want to be involved with atheism, humanism, or the free thought community here in Washington, you really, and you're looking for an entry point, you don't have to look any further than the Secular Humanist Press. That's our vision for it. And while it's going to start online, we hope to return to print someday.
Yes.
And something that we didn't talk about, which I do want to mention, is we want to be active on the local political scene.
Mm-hmm.
We want to go down to Olympia and tell politicians not to ignore us, not to write laws against us.
And that's one of those places, like with going back to the Reason Rally, that providing those sorts of numbers, providing that sort of organization, and providing a unified voice is really, really critical. Because
it totally is. And there are organizations that are already signed up. There are supporting organizations. You're listening to one right now. We cannot be members because we're not community organizations, but we do support the Evergreen State Freethought Federation. There's also Humanists of Washington, clearly, lending its 30-year history to this federation. There's Seattle Atheists, Tacoma Atheists, Auburn Freethought Society, Am I missing anything?
And our partners at Living After Faith.
And Living After Faith, of course. And there's I'm being very circumspect about this because there's other organizations ready to sign up, but they're not ready to announce yet. It's not just those organizations yet. There's more coming. I think the Evergreen State Freethought Federation is key to the future of atheism and freethought here in Washington. I think it's a necessary tool. We are so secular out here that the rest of the country should be looking to us for direction,
yes,
not the other way around.
Yeah, we're just tired of having this so much power, so many people, and just having it just like a flashlight when it should be a laser.
Yeah.
So if you want more information than when we've been able to tell you today, we will be at the conference, the Northwest Freethought Conference, this coming weekend. We'll have tables set up. You will be able to talk to us. We'll be able to give you more information. If you are an organizational leader, please come to us and have a discussion with us. We would love to have you on board.
Or email. There's a website coming. You can look at askanatheist.tv for information about where to find that website, where our phone number is going to be. I can't announce it right this second because I'm still working on it, but it's all coming. And next week, Ask an Atheist will be at the NFA conference. We will be taping our show there. So next week will be recorded as well. Post show this week is not at the office. It is at Doyle's. There has been a change. So anyway, that's I think all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me was Mike Gillis and Eileen Caballo. Our special thanks to Rebecca Friedman and Dick Alvord. Music, as usual, is by Chris Coleman. Our production assistants are Jeremy Whitman, Steve Jones, Jerry Schiffelbein, and Jeremy Whitman. Ask an Atheist and any DM Media production. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv, or you can go to our website at askanatheist.tv, or leave us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. See you next week.
IRN USA Radio News, I'm John Russell.